So for Parshas Kitisa, we're looking at Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel. And this is the Parsha of Shabbos. It's very interesting that Kitisa is more famous for the episode of the Egel, but tucked away in this Parsha is Shabbos. V'atah daber el bnei Yisrael leimar, ach es shabsosai tishmoru, ki os hi beini uveinechem, udorosechem, lodas ki ani Hashem mekadeshchem. So the Torah says that the Shabbos is an os. Obviously, the Torah is saying that there's something unique about Shabbos. So we'll take a look at Rashi. And Rashi has a number of different comments here on this pasuk. One of the most important comments, perhaps, is his last comment. But we'll come back to the previous comment in a minute. Os. We said that the Torah singles out Shabbos as an os. So Rashi says, Os gedolahi beinenu shebacharti bochem. God says, this is an os, a great sign between me, with a capital M, and you, that I have chosen you. So the chosenness of Klal Yisrael, as opposed to all the other nations, expresses itself in the Shabbos. And Rashi elaborates on this. He embellishes this. He says, "Banchili lachem yom minuchasi l'minucha," that I bequeath to you the day of my resting, with a capital M, l'minucha, for your resting. So Rashi clearly indicates that the day of Shabbos is a day of God's resting. And amongst the Tariag mitzvos, this becomes very unique, because we don't find with regard to other mitzvahs that God says, you know, you're imitating me. Right, for example, in the davening on Shabbos, we say, Yakiru banecha v'yedu kimei itcha hi menuchasam. Their menucha, our resting on Shabbos, is mei itcha. It's from you. So I'll just read to you here, you don't have it on your page, a comment to the Abu Draham. He says, Gam ator rotzeh she'akiru v'yedu banecha. What we say in davening is that God, you want that us, the people of Israel, your children, shemitzvah shel Shabbos eina keshara mitzvahs. You want us to experience something unique on Shabbos, which sets it apart from all the other mitzvahs. B'shara mitzvahs lo tziva, Hashem did not command us leman yasu kemocha. There's no built-in explanation to a mitzvah that we should fulfill the mitzvah because we want to do like you do. We are imitating God. Aval benucha Shabbos, the mitzvah of resting on Shabbos, he leman yasu kamocha, so that we should imitate you. That just like with regard to HaKadosh Baruch, it says, Vayom HaShvi Shavas Vayinofash, that God rested on the day, on the seventh day, so too we have to imitate Hashem's resting, and we too have to rest. That's what sets aside Shabbos as so unique, and that's why we say in davening, we say Yakiru banecha v'yedu ki me'itcha hi menuchasim, that we are imitating you, and that's exactly what I think Rashi is saying over here when he says yom menuchasi l'menucha. That it's a yom menucha of Hakadosh Baruch. That Menucha Shabbos is essentially Yom Menuchasi Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what God is giving, He's bequeathing to us. And that makes this mitzvah of Shabbos unique amongst all the other mitzvahs. That's as far as that Rashi is concerned. Now let's backtrack to an earlier Rashi. Ach Eshabsosai Tishmoru. Now I don't know in the English, how does he translate that pasuk? Again, this pasuk Yud Gimel. But you don't have to go through the entire pasuk. Just those four words. Ach eshabsosai tishmoru. Right. Speak to the people of Israel. Yeah.
You must observe my Sabbath.
However. Okay. So the ach is however. Now here, in order to appreciate this, what we need to know is a statement in the Yerushalmi, which Rashi is going to quote here. The Yerushalmi says in Masechta Brachos that ach kol achin verakim shebat Torah, anytime the Torah uses the word however, it's called a miut. A miut means an exclusion.
Miut.
Mem yud ayin vav tet. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi's trying to figure out what does the word ach come to exclude in this pasuk. And Rashi says the following. Keep in mind that what came before this pasuk is the building of the Mishkan. He says, Afal pishetiu redufim uzrizim bezirus molecha Shabbos al tintche mipaneha. Now, as you might think, that since we're dedicated to observe the Shabbos, and on the other hand, we have to build the Mishkan, now what happens on the seventh day? Should we continue building the Mishkan, or should we desist because of Shabbos? Says Rashi, kol achin v'rakim miyutim. Whenever the Torah says ach, it comes as a miyut. Lemait Shabbos mimaleches ha-mishkan. To exclude Shabbos from maleches ha-mishkan. So the way we read it is as follows. The Torah commands you to do maleches ha-mishkan on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. But ach, vayom. What does it say? Ach es ha-psosi tishmo. When you get to the seventh day, ach. Ach is a miyut. Stop. Desist from maleches ha-mishkan. That's Rashi's opinion. Now what I want to share with you is an insight of the Malbim. The Malbim, his name was Leibush, he wanted to know what's the difference between the usage of the word ach and the usage of the word rak. In both cases, ach v'rak, it's a miut, it's coming to exclude. So why did the Torah use two different words? In some contexts it used the word ach, in other contexts it used the word rak. So the Malbim comes up with an unbelievable chiddush. He says the following. I'll read it to you. He says, "Ach mora miut b'mishpat hasheni." The word "ach" is excluding something with regard to the sentence that comes after it. Ritzoni lomar b'mishpat shebo bo milas ach. So you take the sentence, the verse in the Torah, it starts with the word ach, and you bracket it. It becomes an entity, a unit unto itself. The ach has to relate within that unit. Ubazem moved al mimilas rak, but it, as opposed to the word rak, reish kuf, shemotzias hadavra min ha-mishpat hakodem. There the word rak is coming to exclude what came before it. You know, the Torah says that this is the following law, and then it says rak, but that law doesn't apply in the following cases. So where is the limitation? Is it the limitation of what comes after the word ach v'rak, or what came before it? Says the Malbim, it depends. If you're talking about the word ach, then it's a limitation of that which comes after it. If you're talking about the word rak, it comes to limit what came before. And he gives the following example. This is a fascinating example. If you open up your Chumash, as I always tell you to bring in a Chumash, to Shmos Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Yud Ches. The Torah there describes a battle, a physical battle, that's taking place between two people. V'hika Ishas Reyehu. So Reuven hits Shimon. B'Even or B'Egrof with his fist, with a stone, with some sort of utensil. And the Pasuk goes on to tell you the following. If Shimon dies, then Reuven is going to be put to death as a murderer. If, on the other hand, Shimon survives, then the pasuk says, "Shifto yitein v'rapo yirape," which means that Reuven has to pay damages. He's got to compensate Shimon for sheves, meaning for all the employment that he couldn't have earned that money. And Rafi has to pay him also for medical expenses. So the pasuk there says what? It says, "Rak shivto yitain v'rapo yirape." Instead of saying "ach," it says "rak." Oh, so the Malbim says that the word "rak" goes back to the pasuk that came before it. Under what circumstances do we put Reuven to death? That's only because Shimon died as a result of this injury. But if, on the other hand, Shimon survives, they send him to the hospital, and you know he's laid up in bed with a couple of broken limbs. So then, in that case, then Reuven, the attacker, the assailant, only is chayev to pay compensation. He's not chayev misa. So again, in the first part of the pasuk, when v'hikra ishes reyehu and Shimon, the victim, dies, then we put the makeh to death. Right? Reuven is chayev as a rotzeach. But now, if Shimon survives this injury, then rak. There's no chiv misa on Reuven, the attacker. And if there's no chiv misa, then rak shivto yitain varapa yirape, reduce his rak means to exclude what came before. What came before it was that Reuven has to be put to death. Why does Reuven have to be put to death under what circumstances? Because Shimon what?
Died.
Now the Torah says rak, but if Shimon survives the attack, there's no chiv misa as we delineated earlier. And shifto yitain perapo yirapa. We've now completely liquidated the chiv misa. Right? We have a halacha called kimleim d'rabmin, and kimleim d'rabmin means that if someone for one criminal act incurs two different chiyuvim, let's say he should be put to death and he should pay damages, then we take the more harsh punishment and we completely relieve him of the lesser punishment. That's called kimleim. So if Shimon died, then Reuven will be put to death as a murderer. He doesn't pay damages. But if Shimon survives the attack, then Reuven does not get death. And as a result, Shifto Yitain Varapa Yirapa has to pay damages. So that's the Malbim's demonstration of the difference between Rak and Ach. Oh. Now let's take our Pasuk. Our Pasuk says, Ach eshav sosai tishmor. Now, according to the Malbim's thesis, the miut of ach, the exclusion of ach, goes not on the previous pasuk, but on the pasuk itself as a self-contained unit. So now the Torah is limiting shmira shabbos. Shmira shabbos means I have to desist from 39 categories of labor. But the Torah says, however. And that, however, is indicating that under certain circumstances, I do not have to desist from the 39. I'm allowed to implement one of those 39 categories of malacha. So what would apply here? Rabbeinu Bechai says that this is the case of karbonos that adochim es ha-shabbos. When a tzibur, let's say, brings a karbon on Shabbos, like for example the Tomei Chol Shachar, the Tomei Chol Bein Arbayim, and other karbonos. So the Torah says, Olas Shabbos b'Shabbato, meaning we take the karbon and we're makriv it on the Mizbeach. Now you may know that when you makriv a karbon, you implement many, many different malachas. The first of which is going to be what? Shchita. Shchita. Maybe a muktzah issue, but it's not a malacha. But shchita is a malacha when you slaughter the animal. And then we do afshatas ha'ar, which is another malacha, mafshit. And then, of course, we burn the fire on the mizbeach. That's another malacha called havara, and so forth and so on. But the Torah says, Ola Shabbos b'Shabbat, the karmon is going to be brought on Shabbos, notwithstanding the fact that he's going to violate many different malachas, but there's no violation. Nevertheless, he's going to bring the karmon, despite the fact that there are many different malachas in Fah. So, ach, Eshav Sosai Tishmoru, the Ach is coming to limit what came after it, that Shmir Shabbos, for the case of Karban. We'll soon see that the Ramban has a different interpretation of the exclusion of Ach, and he talks about a case of Pikuach Nefesh. That means there's a Chola Mesukan, someone who's in jeopardy of losing his life, and will do any malacha that's necessary in order to save his life. That's Ach Eshav Sosai Tishmoru. But now we want to read Rashi. Rashi, if you take a look, says something else. Rashi says, "Lemait mimalechas haMishkan." This means that even though during the first 6 days of Yemei Amasa we build the Mishkan and we violate 39 categories of Malacha in doing so, but when it comes to Shabbos, we don't involve ourselves in Malechas haMishkan. So that means that Rashi is using the word ach to go lahava olam afreya for the next pasuk or the previous pasuk. The previous pasuk says you should build the Mishkan. Ach, Rashi learns. But when we get to Shabbos, we desist. We terminate our involvement in Malechus HaMishkan. So how does Rashi use the word ach in the mute of ach? To go backwards. In other words, Rashi rejects the principle of the Malbim. The Malbim says that only the word rach indicates an exclusion to what came before it. The word ach, on the other hand, is excluding something which comes after the word ach. Rashi is completely oblivious to this distinction of the Malbim. The Ramban, on the other hand, like Rabbeinu Bachai, is upset with this Rashi because the word ach is meant to come to exclude something that came before it. So I'll read to you a few lines from the Ramban.
In English, ach is back.
But, however, right?
But for.
But again, it's a technical rule that ach and the rakim are a mute. Correct?
Right. And rak is only is ahead.
So listen to the Ramban after quoting Rashi. He says, "Val kosev hazeh hu mafteach ladas." He says he doesn't like the pshat of Rashi. Just one second. Where did I lose the Ramban here? Anyway, okay, I'm not going to waste your time because we're always pressured for time. But the Ramban disagrees, and he says that the ach by Yom Hashvi, ach Hashabsosa, excuse me, Tishmoru, is a reference to a case of Mila. That the law is that if a baby was born on a Shabbos, and you count now 8 days until next Shabbos, do you do the Mila or do you not do the Mila on Shabbos? We do the Mila on Shabbos, even though Mila itself involves at least one malacha, maybe more than one. That's called Malachas Chabura. And if you were participating in my Ksuba Shiur, that's just a plug on Wednesday night. So we had a long discussion about what exactly is the nature of Malachas Chabura when you draw blood. Oh, Pikuach Nefesh, says the Ramban. Or alternatively, a case of someone who is in danger of losing his life. In all those cases, we do violate Malachas Shabbos. In other words, Rashi's coming to teach us that the Ach is excluding Malachas HaMishkan on Shabbos, that we don't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. Therefore, it's going Liel ad Liel on the previous Pasuk. But Rabbeinu Bachai and his Rebbe, the Ramban, they interpret that Ach is coming to limit Shmira Shabbos. In fact, it's very interesting. If the Ramban and Rabbeinu Bachai would have used the word Ach, not as a reference to Karbanos on Shabbos as Rabbeinu Bachai would have it, or to Mila or Pikuach Nefesh as the Ramban would have it, but would accept Rashi that the word Ach in this pasuk is coming to exclude Malachas HaMishkan, what would be the din if the Ramban would have allowed that? Again, if Ach is coming to limit, based on the Shitas HaRishonim and the Malbim, that which comes after the Ach, and if we accept Rashi that the Ach is coming to refer to Malachas HaMishkan, what would be the final conclusion? Exactly, that we will build the Mishkan on Shabbos. And that's against all the sugyas. So, the only way Rashi could use the word Ach to exclude Malachas HaMishkan is if he uses it as a rak in the Malbim's frame of reference to refer to the previous pasuk. Okay then, let's now take a little bit of break to talk about the page that I handed out to you today, and that is the Rimonim and the Pa'amonim. Okay then, so if you have a Chumash, you'll open up to Perek Chav Ches. And the pasuk says, "Vasisa es hamiil, vasisa al shulav rimone tcheles v'argome v'tolash shoni al shulav sviv upamone zav b'tocham Stav. Do you have that? Chav Ches, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Beis, Lamed Gimel, all those psukim. So,
470.
So what we're going to focus our attention on are the words Upamone Zav Bitocham Saviv. How does he translate those words? Bitocham Saviv? Do you have the English there? You don't have it? Again, Perakov Ches. Pasuk Lamed Gimel, it should say Upamone Zav Besocham Saviv.
Between them all around. And Golgoth, between them.
Between them all around. What does it mean, between them all around? What does that mean? So let's look at Rashi. You have Rashi.
All around the bigger.
Rashi says Beinam Saviv, Bein Shnei Rimonim, Pamon Echad, Davuk Vitolui, Beshule Hameil. Okay then? Now if you flip your page that I gave out, I think, did I give you this page? No, I didn't give you this page. Here. I don't have that many copies, so maybe you'll share it. Flip it to the other side. Okay, George, can you flip that page to the other side? Okay, and what we're looking at is the Ramban. The Ramban says, V'lo yadati, I have here a translation for you of the Ramban. V'lo yadati, I don't know, Gamkein, he has other questions that came before, but we're going to focus on this one. Lama osa hagav hapa'amonim li'atzmam, pa'amon ben shnei rimonim. The bells are between the pomegranates. Kiim kein, if Rashi is correct, lo hayu harimonim mishamshim klum. It seems that the rimonim, the pomegranates, have no purpose whatsoever. In a sense, you just place the bell between the two pomegranates. Ki im kein lo hayu harimonim misham shiklum v'imlin noi. Perhaps you might say that there's noi over here. In other words, by the fact that you add these pomegranates, I'm sorry, these rimonim, I meant to say, then you beautify the me'il. He says, "Lama hayu asuyim k'rimonim chalulim." Why were they made as hollow rimonim? Okay, yasu kimin tapuchei zav, but rather he should have made them like solid gold apples. Okay, let's take a look at footnote number 74. Do you have that? If the pomegranates were for ornamentation only, why would the Torah require woolen likenesses of pomegranates, which are hollow? Hollow meaning after they remove the seeds. He says that round balls, which are called apples, so the word apples here in the Ramban, which is tapuchei zav, referred to the pomegranate without its seeds, which is like a round ball, and it's made of gold, without any a visible hollow, would be more ornamental. So what the Ramban is trying to figure out is that why did they hollow out these rimonim? Meaning, why did they remove the seeds from the rimonim? Doesn't seem that that would enhance the nut, the ode, and furthermore, Shayitzarach Hakosiv Lefareish, the pasuk should have spelled out, Bame Yisleh Hapa'amonim. You have to hang these belts on the hem of the robe, as he says. So how do you hang them on the hem of the robe? Im Yasa Bahem Tabos Litlosam Bahem. It means that the Torah should have spelled out that he should make rings in the bells, rings, right? If you have a ring, then the bell will hang from the ring, and the ring will be attached. Right, the pomonim, I meant to say the bells. What did I say? I don't know, whatever I said, I meant to say the bells. So he needs rings inside the bells to hang the bells and attach them to the robe, meaning to the me'il. And if you take a look in the footnote again, number 75, he says, the Ramban does not ask this question regarding the pomegranates, for since they, like the robe, were made of wool, we can assume that they were woven into the hem of the robe, but the bells are made of gold. And if that's so, you can't weave them into the me'il. So they have to be attached by hanging them at the hem. And therefore, the Torah should explain how this hanging was accomplished, meaning the Torah should have commanded the creation of rings that would attach the bells to the me'il. And therefore, the Ramban says, "Aval heim betocha mamish." Not the way Rashi says it, that the pomegranates were on the outsides, you know, meaning the there was one pomegranate, then a bell, and then another pomegranate. But rather, says the Ramban, the rimonim were betocha mamish. They were inside. I'm sorry, the palmonim, I should say, were inside the rimonim. Chalulim. How did that? How was that accomplished? Because now we understand why they took out the seeds of the pomegranates. It was now a chalul. Chalul means it was hollow in the inside. Vasuyim kimin rimonim ktanim shelo pasku pihem. Vapamonim tmuna behem v'nirim b'tocham. So the Ramban says that the pomegranates were hollow. They were fashioned like small pomegranates that did not yet open their mouths. And if you take a look at footnote 77, he has an explanation here that when pomegranates remain on the tree after they've ripened, they crack open. That I can testify to you from my pomegranates, which I have in my backyard. And the Gemara says in Zvachim, Reinadav Peiches, it says there that the pomegranates on the hem of the me'il should resemble those that have not yet been opened. Vapamonim, says the Ramban, tmunim bahem v'nirim b'tocham. Okay, let's see what the Ramban is saying over here. He says, what was the Ramban's objection to Rashi? What was the purpose of the rimonim? And the answer is, again, according to Rashi, he can only say it was noy, but if he says if it was noy, then the question is, why do they have to be hollow? Now, what the Ramban is saying is that the purpose of the rimonim is to serve as a case for the parmonim. The parmonim were inside the rimonim. Now the Ramban has another objection to Rashi, that the Torah never explains how these bells are going to attach them, because they're not made out of wool, they're made out of gold. How are they going to attach themselves and hang on the hem of the robe? And according to the Ramban, that's not a kasha, because what was hanging, what was holding on to the bells were the rimonim themselves, because the bells were inside the rimonim. Now, there's also a footnote, number 79, that I wanted to call to your attention. That's, I don't think you have that on your page.
No, it's not.
Oh, okay, so let me just get that. He says that the weave of the pomegranates was sufficiently loose that the golden bells, right, the pomegranates were made of wool, so that when you weave the pomegranates, you allowed it to be loose. Loose meaning the bells were sort of hanging inside the pomegranates, inside the rimonim, says the Ramban. So the golden bells could be seen if they were totally obscured. Why would the Torah require them to be made of gold? Why not use a less expensive, extensive metal? Good. So that's what we have here in this Ramban. Now there's another Ramban which I wanted to call your attention to. And that's over here. This is in Parshas Pekudei. You'll have to listen about that. It's a short Ramban. The Pasuk says in Parshas Pekudei, you can open up to Perek Lamed Tes, Pasuk Chav Dalet. It says, Vayasu al Shulei Hame'il. Right, on the robe's hem. Right, Shulei means the hem. Rimone Tcheles V'argamon V'tolas Shani. Okay, the pomegranates, as we said, were made of wool, which is called tcheles. Tcheles is wool. And different colors here. It's purple and scarlet wool. And it says, Mashzar, Okay, they were twisted. Vayasu pamone zahav tahar. Now it says that they made these bells out of gold, right? And then the Torah says that you attach. Let's read the pasuk inside. You have the pasuk?
Where is it?
Again, it's Perek Lamed Tes, pasuk Chaf Hey. I just want to get some clarity here, if we can. It says here. Vayitnu es haponim pa'amonim. What's the next word? Betol harimonim. Well, whose pshat does that sound like? Again, according to Rashi, it was rimon pa'amon. According to Ramban, it was rimonim. It was pa'amonim betol harimonim. So now the pasuk is explicit. It says vayitnu. Es ha-pamoni b'toch harimon. So you could already anticipate that the Ramban is going to rejoice about this pasuk. He writes the following: the tam and the meaning of this pasuk of Ayasu al shule hamiel rimone tchelus fargomon sha'asu harimonim. Why did they create these pomegranates? Laseis osam al shule meil saviv. Right, to place them on the robe's hem all around. V'asu pamoni zav tar v'asimu ha-pamoni b'tol harimonim. And they would place the pamonim, these bells, inside the pomegranates. Kodem sheyitnu osam v'me'il. Right, so they place the bells inside the pomegranates and then they put the pomegranates on the robe. V'hine ha-pamonim b'toch ha-rimonim b'toch. The bells are inside the pomegranates, and that's before b'tolch means before they attached the rimonim to the me'il. Vayasimu ha-rimonim al shulei ha-me'il sova pamonim b'tocham. After they placed the bells inside the pomegranates, then they took the pomegranates and they attached them to the robe with the bells inside. And this is the Rabban's answer to the question of why it says Vayitnu es ha-pamonim b'toch harimonim. That's number one. And then it says Al shulei ha-me'il saviv b'toch harimonim. Why did the Torah have to repeat itself twice b'toch harimonim? Says Rabban, in order to emphasize that the mitzvah required that you place the bells inside the pomegranates before you attach the pomegranates and hang them on the hem of the robe. The Zerayel Amasha Pirashti b'sei there in the parish of Ata Titzav. And that's where the Ramban argues, as we saw before, with Rashi. Rashi thought the Tocha means amongst them, amongst the pomegranates, that there'll be one bell between each two pomegranates. The Ramban argues, on the other hand, B'toch HaRimona means inside the pomegranates, and that's going to be the machlokas here between Rashi and the Ramban. Okay then? So that we have here. The last thing I want to talk to you about, again, like if you have to go, please go, that is Aaron's role in the Chet HaEgel. And here I want to share something very interesting with you, which I think you'll see on the page that I gave you. Okay, so we're looking at Perek Lamed Beis, the first two psukim. Let's open up the Chumash, so we have that in front of us. Perek Lamed Beis. This is one of the most depressing parishes in the world, if not the most. That's why when I get to parishes Kitisa, I start shuddering. The Pasuk says the following. Pasuk Lamed Beis. Perek Lamed Beis. Vayar ha'am ki boshesh Moshe l'redes minahai. Right, the people see that Moshe is delaying. Vayikoel ha'amal Aaron, they gather around Aaron. Now he becomes the substitute leader. Vayomer elav kum asei lanu Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu.
494.
Correct. Now you will establish some sort of a Elohim. I mean, again, what the word Elohim means here, we don't know. The Ramban has pages and pages to try to explain what the word Elohim means, and he claims it means a guide, but that's not for us today. And he says the following: Kizeh Moshe Ish Asher Aletim Eretz Yitzrayim Lo Yadanu Ma Hayolo. That's pasuk. So what's Aaron's response? Pasuk Beis. Vayomer Aleihem Aaron Parku Nizme Hazov Asher Biyaznei Noshim. So he asks them to bring the jewelry from the ladies forward. So if you take a look on the page I gave you, he quotes the Balei HaTosfos. Aaron l'shem shamayim niskavi. Aaron was certainly motivated for the sake of heaven. Omar, he declared. This is, according to Balei HaTosfos, getting into the mind of Aaron as he weighs all his options. Im Omer Lahem, if I will suggest, if I will offer Kalev O Nachshon, you Rosh Aleichem, if I will say to them, let Kalev, who is Kalev? When did he arrive on to greatness? Later on at the parish of the Meraglim, but already the Ramban says he was, the Balei HaTosfos, excuse me, say he was already considered a future leader of Klal, so they were aware of his potential. He was one of the Roshei HaShvatim, right, the Nesiim of the Shvatim. Nachshon, on the other hand, had already reached his greatness when he jumped into the Yam. So this seems like a very logical solution. Why not just appoint, you know, in his mind, in Aaron's mind, it would be on a temporary basis, one of the leaders that would be acceptable to the people of Israel in place to replace Moshe? Aaron was afraid to do such a thing. Why? Im yamlichu aleihem, if they will accept either Kalev or Nachshon as the king over them, Kishiyavo Moshe. What's going to happen when Moshe comes down? Now, Aaron knew that Moshe was going to come down. So now one of two things would happen. Either Yoridu Migdulaso, either they will say, look, Moshe, you're a has-been, you know, you've been replaced. Or on the other hand, they may say, let's get rid of Nachshon, let's get rid of Kalev. We only appointed them because we thought Moshe was not a real. Is Tarbek Tata Beineum Viavo Lidei Shvichus Dome? Is the Ramban said, the Balei HaTosfos say that Aaron already had such a, we call it Yad Al HaDofek, he had such a finger on the pulse of Klal Yisrael. He knew that there would be such a machlokas. Imagine the two camps as to who is the leader. They're the, you know, they're those who are the loyalists, we'll call them, that are loyal to Moshe Rabbeinu. He came back, now he remains. And then there'll be the upstarts. You know, there's going to be the young people, let's say, will be rebellious. Here, we had enough of Moshe Rabbeinu. Later on, we're going to see that this is going to be part of the problem of Chet Korach, you know, another Aviv and so forth. They're going to say, you know, when are these old geezers going to die out? We can appoint new blood. Is at the end Yavoli Beishvichas.
But he had a third opinion. Why didn't you just tell him wait? Another day.
They weren't willing to wait. They were just anxious. You know, they were at loss for anything. Oh, Vim Omer. So Aaron thinks, let me say lo etein rosh aleihem. What will be if I don't appoint anyone to replace Moshe? Hem yitnu me'atzma. They're going to decide amongst themselves who's the appropriate candidate. You know, instead of suggesting you have to take Kolev and appoint him, or you have to take Nachshon, it's going to be mass bedlam, what we call anarchy. And once again, who knows if they won't kill each other? You know, it's like you know, in certain countries, you know, when there's an issue about who will take over the leadership, all you have is, you know, is bloodshed. Now he has a third option. V'im Omar Ani Eya Rosh Aleihem. What if he would appoint himself as the leader? That would seem to avoid all the other pitfalls. Number one, when Moshe would come down, you know, 6 hours later, whatever it would be, certainly Aaron would say this was just a temporary thing, so we don't have any issues about that. And secondly, there would be no open question here of anarchy about who would take over the leadership. The answer is Shema Yikshab the Ene Moshe. This is unbelievable. You know, we're always thinking about Moshe being sensitive for Aaron. Here we have the flip side. Aaron is sensitive about Moshe. So therefore, Aaron comes up with a fourth option. And what is that? Asikem b'dvarim shem ben mamish. Let me, in a sense, deflect their attention. You know, give them something else to be busy with that will... what word am I looking for that will
keep him occupied.
Distract him? Yeah, that's the word I want. Keep him occupied. Distract him. He looked for a tactic of distraction. You know, like who's going to win the rugby series or something. You know, that's what he would ask them. And what did he say to them? Get the women folk to bring their jewelry forward. Omar Pirku Lefisha Nosh. Oh, Pirku. Again, what's the pasuk? Pirku nizme yazov asher biyozei neshechem. And what did he anticipate? This would cause a tremendous hullabaloo, right? Imagine you come home and you say to your wife, you know, give me all your gold earrings and necklaces and all your other jewelry. The noshim have this kind of sense of wanting to hoard their jewelry. The asimu irbuvia v'dov. And there's going to be a whole to-do over here. The men say, bring forward your gold, and the women don't want to allow them, and they have them locked up in certain places, and the men are going to push for the keys, and they refuse to give them the keys to the safe where their jewelry is locked up. It's going to be labor to Christmas. And this was a delay tactic. Says the Samderech, if you have the page I gave you, Niflol Amizbone, you know, those who think about this will see Godel Kochos HaNefesh, they will see the great insights of Aaron. The Otsem Gduloso, his giant personality, that even when it comes to finding a temporary solution, not only is he sensitive and anticipates what will be, you know, the sociological result here and cause total bloodshed. When it comes to taking the job for himself, he's sensitive to Moshe Rabbeinu. He doesn't want Moshe to think that he, Aaron, took advantage of this opportunity to take over the Malchus. But rather, he came up with a delay task. And here, we want to study the Ramban. Asei lanu Elohim. What was their clarion call? Create an Elohim. Asher yelchu lefanenu kizem Moshe isha sharolenu meretz Mitzrayim lo yadanu mahoyo lo. So let's just quickly read the Ramban and we'll end it with this. The Ramban says the following, which you'll see on your page. Hakosav azeu mafteach ladas inyon haegel imachsheves osav. This verse is the key to understanding the idea behind the golden calf and the intention of its makers. Ki biyadua shelo hayu Yisrael svurim shemoshe hu Elohim. There's no question in anyone's mind. Moshe was a human being, and they did not attribute divine powers to Moshe. V'shehu b'kocho osalehem ha'osos v'amosim. Not one Jew thought that Moshe with his own power was able to bring about all the miracles, the signs, and the wonders back in Mitzrayim. Uma tam sheyomru. So therefore, what sense would there be for them to say, Kevon shalach Moshe, since Moshe has departed from us, Nas Elohim, let's make a god to replace him? Meaning, if they attributed godlike powers to Moshe, then you could understand that they were looking for some sort of Elohim, a god to replace Moshe Rabbeinu. But the people stated, when they said they sought Elohim to replace Moshe Rabbeinu, they knew that Moshe was not a god, and therefore what is Elohim referred to? It can't refer to God. Usually you translate the word Elohim as God. The Odin, furthermore, ki befeirish amru, they said Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu. They should have said Elohim lo shiunosim lehem. They didn't say this is God, that he would provide them with life in this world and in the world to come. Again, if they were claiming that we need a God-like figure, well, a God is going to protect them in that terrible wilderness with all its harsh conditions. So if the function Elohim was to lead them the way, that's not Elohim in the sense of a divine figure. Avil, but rather, says the Ramban, Mevakshim Moshe Acher, they wanted a replacement for Moshe. Amru, because they declared, Moshe Horo Lanu Haderech Mitzrayim Vadheina. He was the God. Shayo Amasim, all the journeys, Al Pi Hashem Biad Moshe. He was the one who decided for us how we'd find our way through this desert, how we travel through the desert. Hide Avad Mimenu. He's lost for us. Nasa lanu Moshe Acher sheyora haderech lefanein al pi Hashem biyado. Let's find a substitute for Moshe who will show us the way. He will guide us.
To get Kalev.
Maybe Kalev would have been a good option, correct? And therefore the people thought that the golden calf somehow would receive divine inspiration and would guide them in their travels. So they weren't asking for a divine figure, you know, to attribute divine powers, but rather for some sort of intermediary between Hashem and them to guide them, just as Moshe served in that capacity before him. The Zatam, and that's the explanation why his Kiram, why they mentioned Ha'ish Asher Helanu. The emphasis here is to replace the man Asher Helanu who brought us up. Lo ha'el asher hel. I mean, they don't say, let's replace the God who brought them up, but rather ha'ish asher helonu. Ki itztarchu le'ish Elohim. They needed a man of God, meaning they needed someone to replace Moshe. Moshe was the man of God. Moshe was the one who would bring from HaKadosh Baruch Hu the guidance and to facilitate all their journeys successfully through the harsh desert. Now they needed someone to replace Moshe. And that's, if you take a look at the comment here of the Sam Derech, he writes that Asiyas HaEgel, the creation of the golden calf, is Bikshu Bnei Yisrael Lekabel Al Yidei HaEgel Hashpa VaHanhaga, that the Egel would serve to bring down some sort of shefa, some sort of guidance, hanhaga, kiderech hashpa, shahaisab al yidei Moshe Rabbeinu be hanhagasa. And the Ramban is going to later on say that why the calf? The calf is called the Pnei Ashar. The Pnei Ashar is what's called the Merkava. That's in Sefer Yechezkel. And they thought that through creating the Egel, that shefa, that hashpa, would come from above through the Merkava of Pnei Ashar. Their sin, heaven forbid, was not one of idol worship, to attribute divine powers to the calf. They didn't have any doubt that Hashem, that God in heaven, but call Ritzonim Hoya Limanig Sheyora Derech Lefanenu Al Pi Hashem Biyado. This should have been a replacement for Moshe Rabbeinu. Just like Moshe guided them Al Pi Hashem, so too they wanted to find a different guide. What was their sin then? Their sin was that they believed that a physical object, in this case a golden calf, could serve as a replacement for Moshe Rabbeinu and a way in which God would guide them. Al chet zeh nenshu, they were punished for this kind of a chet. But again, it's a much lower, less severe kind of chet. Ratzu lislo li'atzmam mesilos chadoshos. They were guilty of creating new pathways in the service of Hashem. Lo kefi avanas ritzon Hashem v'atorah. In other words, what they should have asked was, would this be acceptable to God? as a reflection of God's divine will embodied in the laws of the Torah. Instead, they decided for themselves, we are going to find a derech chadasha, our own way. Well, what sin does that remind you of, by the way? I don't know if I'm the only one, by sheer association. If the Ramban attributes, if the Ramban defines the sin of Chet HaEgel as those who wanted to create their own derech in Avodas Hashem without conferring with God, without conferring with His giants, His Nevi'im, without conferring with the Torah, what does that sound like?
Reform?
Yeah, but in the Torah itself. I mean, obviously the Reform are basing themselves on that, but who are the two individuals who wanted to break new ground on their own initiative? Exactly, Nadav Avihu. They would bring an Esh Zara, and the Torah says, Asher lo tziva lokim. You could have a tremendous desire. We'll also see this in the case of Ma'afilim, who climbed up the mountain against the will of Hashem. These are all individuals who are motivated to try to get close to Hashem, but instead of following the guidance of the Torah itself, Mashem Masur Liad Adam Lashpia Shefa Bria Bibria Al Yidei Kavanos V'Lachshov Machshov Zerak Shemiskaven Achar Omek. The only way man is allowed and man could possibly succeed in bringing a shefa, some sort of divine benevolence from above down to this creation, is by having the kavana, the lachshov machshavos of the omek ratzon Hashem. And in these parshios that we started reading from Truma until the end of Sefer Shmos, who is the individual who is able to understand how to have the right intentions? Bezalel. Do you remember we discussed on Sunday Bezalel? What was the greatness of Bezalel? It's also on the same page I just gave to you. It says, Re'ei Karasi B'Shem Bezalel Ben Uri Ben Chur, and the Ramban says that he's the Chacham Gadol in Chachma and Tvuna. And Lahavin Sod HaMishkan, he knew the secrets of the Mishkan, the Ratzon Hashem, and therefore he was able to create all the utensils with that kavana, the Lachshov Machshavos of the Omek Ratzon Hashem Al Pi Torah. But here at the Parsha of the Egel, what did the Jewish people want to do? Lachapes Drachim Chadoshos. They wanted to look for new ways. You know, this is like Torah in motion. They want to change the way of the Torah. Shalok fi derech haTorah haMesura lanu, against the way the Torah was given to us. We have what's called the Mesoras haTorah. The Mesoras haTorah means that we are granted a way of relying on those who came before us in an unbroken chain of generations upon generations of giants who understand the Torah, who understand the deeper meaning, the Ratzon Hashem. V'asisa yoshev atov, says the Ramban, we have to understand the deeper meaning and the will of God that's inherent in the laws of the Torah. And those who break from tradition and they think that they can come up with new ways of serving Hashem, they are basically repeating the sins that brought about the destruction.
How much tradition was it? 80 days?
No, I'm saying to take an eagle, a golden calf, and
but
say
there was no tradition. There was no tradition to prior to this. How much
they already changed it? You see how quick.
No, but I'm saying they didn't.
When was Masan Torah? 80 days prior to this.
Wait a second, George. I just want to understand the following. There are two extremes here. One extreme is to accuse Bnei Yisrael of avodah zara, of attributing to this golden calf a deity. You know, it's a deity. The other extreme is to say that they were guiltless. In the middle comes the Ramban, and he says the following. They weren't guilty of Avodah Zarah. And he has all those riots that we discussed before. They were looking for a replacement for Moshe Rabbeinu, a guide. On the other hand, says the Ramban, they weren't guiltless. What was their chait, and why would they be punished? They should have asked Aaron, what do we do in this situation? They should have been absolutely machnir themselves. They should have subjugated themselves to Aaron. He was the gadol. He understood the Torah. He received the Torah. He would guide them as to what to do in this situation. Or they would refer to other Talmidei Chacham who could interpret the Torah. But instead, on their own, they decided to pave a new way to undermine the Mesiras HaTorah, not to be interested in what's the Omek Hashem. They made a decision. We're going to create a golden calf. And even though, again, that kavanas may have been l'shem shamayim, but nevertheless, it's tremendous chet, a sin, that's going to lead to punishment when they decide how they're going to receive the shefa and in what way they're going to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be manig this world. There's a way, a definite way in which God is manig this world. I see we have to stop. And that's what they should have tried to understand. So again, the Ramban goes on for pages and pages, but we won't have time to go through this. I just wanted to give you a little bit of a taste of, you know, what I call the tip of the iceberg. The Ramban is of the opinion that this was not Chas v'Shalom a sin of Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, they were not guiltless. They'd be punished, and the punishment is going to come swiftly and severely, and it's going to be extended throughout the generations. We have to learn this lesson. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his way of hanhaga, the way he leads the world. He has a Ratzon Hashem. It's embodied in the Torah. The Talmidei Chachamim are given the authority to understand the Torah on the deepest level and to teach us and to guide us. But when the people start with the grassroots movement and they decide, you know what? Maybe we can change the law a little bit. Maybe we don't have to do it exactly in this way. Maybe a physical entity, a material golden entity, can now become our guide, and God is going to guide us through this physical entity. That's not something that's acceptable in the eyes of God. And basically, what the Ramban is saying here, and that's why I think the unique innovation of the Ramban here and elsewhere, is that on the one hand, the Ramban wants to give Bnei Yisrael credit. Let's not be all black and all negative. They were motivated for the right reasons. They knew that Hashem has to be Madagas instead of Biad Moshe, because Moshe is removed. We have to find a replacement, but that replacement will receive the hashpa and the guidance from Hashem. But what they were doing is they were on their own initiative, with their own svara, so to speak, they were breaking new ground on the hanhaga of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how God would lead the people. And once they did that, they're really undermining the whole Masorah. Because, you know, it's kind of funny over here. You know, the world that we live in today, the so-called Orthodox world, is at least in Chutz La'aretz, I could say this, is now being split into two. I don't know if you're aware of what's going on. And the machlokus is really about this point itself. This is it, the Chet HaEgel. There are those who are out there within the so-called Orthodox camp, and it's not for me to decide whether they are Orthodox or they're not Orthodox, and they will decide what innovations we need to allow for the continuity of the Jewish people. And when they make those decisions on their own, that's when they depart and deviate from what we call the Masorah. And this, my friends, is penetrating into every single area of Jewish life, including Talmud Torah itself. What they're doing now is they're coming with new ways of understanding the Tanakh, in which the people in Tanakh, those personalities that we assume based on our Chazal, on our Masorah, are the heroes, and the others are the villains, and now it becomes Ibcha Mestabra. I mean, I actually once heard a shiur in which the person using various methods that come from the non-Jewish world of literature, they came to the conclusion that Sarah is the Rasha and Hagar is the Tzadikas. Chas v'Shalom, I shouldn't even tell this over to you, because what's going on here is that there's a deviation from the will of Hashem as it's embodied in the Torah and those who are given the keys to interpret that Torah. So you can have two poskim, and they may come to opposite conclusions. But our job is to seek out their guidance. Asei lecha rav. And here, in the case of Chet HaEgel, that's where they deviated, and it's a slippery slope. Because once you deviate, and once even on one occasion you decide, well, we have a grassroots movement, we're going to decide who our leaders are and who's going to guide us, we're going to decide what methods Hashem is going to utilize in this world to connect the Shmei Shamayim with the Aretz, that's the Hanhag of Hashem, this is the Shef of Hashem, that's a slippery slope. And one slight deviation could lead us to Avodah Zarah Mamash. Especially in the case of a nation that's in diapers, so to speak. I mean, this is this You know, this is a nation that for two centuries were under the hashpah of Yad Mitzrayim. My Rebbe used to always say that Yad Mitzrayim is not just a reference to the strong arm and the subjugation and the oppression of the Jewish people at the hands of Mitzrayim, but Yad Mitzrayim means Tarbut Mitzrayim, the whole culture, the paganism of that culture. And he used to say that the chait of Kivras HaTava, which we'll get to, I think it's in Parshas Paloska, if I remember correctly, there the Rav used to always say that the source of the sin of Kivras HaTava is paganism. And they still had this tendency towards paganism in their blood, and they didn't get it out of their bones, so to speak. Okay, but that's for a different discussion. All right, Rav Osai, we'll stop here. We covered a lot of different topics, both in Parshas Tetzaveh and in Parshas Kitisa, and we should be zocher to Tshuva Shlema. You know, Chazal say about the Big Day Kahuna that each one of the begadim is meant to be mechaber on a different avera. And Shlomo Melech says in Koheles is Liolam Tia Begadecha Levanim. Your clothes should be white. So the Gaon says, so what does it mean your clothes should be white? The Marsha says it, and then the Gaon embellishes on it that the Begadim represent not the external majesty and beauty of a person on a physical level, but internally in terms of his nefesh, his midos, his meisim tovim. And a person should always wear clean clothes. And if Chas V'Shalom he gets his clothes a little bit dirty and he did something that's the opposite of a midah tova, Chas V'Shalom, then he's got to do tshuva. And to make sure that your begadim are levanim and your nefesh is pure and clean constantly, you have to do tshuva constantly. You have to constantly introspect. And if we do that, then we know, as Chazal say, that the Big Day Kahuna had the power to protect us against the oivim. And Chazal go very far in the Sefer Yuma, ilule Big Day Kahuna is lo nishtairu misoneim shel Yisrael. Anything, we'd be completely that Big Day Srad, from the word Srad. Srad means the survivors. There would be no survivors left. Chazal say to the sonim of Klal Yisrael, so that's a euphemism. We need the Big Day Kuna to be restored, and our job is midos tovos, that our begadim should always be levon. Only cooling.